we had a downtown at that point in time where we had pockets of really great things, but they lacked connectivity. And somebody who was having dinner at the Blue Plate Diner on 104th Street, if they were going to the Art Gallery of Alberta after dinner, was likely to get into their car. We think that having walkability is a hallmark of a great city. We think that the opportunity to walk and discover without intent along the way is one of the really rich experiences that you get in a great city.
Hello and welcome to a podcast presentation of The Yards, Spring 2019 issue launch and panel discussion. Recorded live at Work Nicer Beaver House, downtown Edmonton's newest co-working space, on Thursday, March 7th. The Yards is a hyper-local quarterly magazine focused on urban, cultural, and social issues in central Edmonton. Published by a nonprofit society in partnership with the Downtown and Oliver Community Leagues. I'm Jeff Samsonow, publisher of Edmonton Quotient, an online magazine, partnering with The Yards to bring you this conversation. You can pick up a copy of The Yards at all kinds of locations in the downtown and Oliver. Check out a listing of those places at theyardsyeg.ca. You can also find the latest from the magazine at that website, theyardsyeg.ca, and if you live in one of those neighborhoods, you probably already received your copy by mail. The spring issue of The Yards takes a look at festival spaces in the core, pros and cons, what's there now, what we could be celebrating in the future. That's where the panel discussion takes us. Oliver Community League President Luam Kifelmariam is your host for the conversation, talking about how Edmonton can remain a festival city and how massive change and construction downtown is shaking things up. Joining her are Bob Black, Executive Vice President of the Cates Group and Executive Vice President of Oilers Entertainment Group Special Projects. Paul Lucas, General Manager of Taste of Edmonton, summer's big downtown food festival, of course, and Stephen Rates, an urban planning student at the University of Alberta. All right, let's jump right into the conversation.
This is my first time moderating a panel, so work with me. Yes, thank you. I'll take that, thank you. I want to start off with asking Stephen, as an urban planner student, why are festivals important or valuable to cities such as Edmonton?
Absolutely, I think this is on, yeah, okay, awesome. Well, festivals are so important to a city like Edmonton because it's very integral to the identity of, the city that we're proud of and the city that we want to share with other people and bring people into. So at a base, I think it's just foundational in the identity that we want to share with other people, and that really affects the kind of decisions that we're making and the sort of, planning policies we develop, because that's something that we want to, bring forward, show off, and reinvigorate moving forward. But beyond that, I think looking at a deeper level, regarding planning decisions, it's something that is at front of mind. How are we, when we're actually developing these spaces like parks, how are we taking that into account? How are we allowing for that space to be programmed in many different ways? How do we make that accessible for people all around our city? And how do we allow for people in the core to have a sense of ownership over that space and also have, all Edmontonians be able to enjoy it? Starting at that high level and setting that policy direction of that's something that's valuable to us is really important. And then when we get closer to the ground and we're making, specific planning decisions, we use that as rationale to back up why we are making the decisions we're making and to reinforce that identity.
Cool. Awesome. Paul, earlier when we were chit-chatting, you said you can put some numbers into what festivals bring to Edmonton, if you wanted to elaborate on that.
Yeah, I would love to. We have approximately 32 festivals that belong to a festival consortium group. We've been meeting now for some 5-6 years now. Of those festivals, 32 that reported their statistics, 2.8 million people come to those festivals. It is open. Can you hear me? Is that better? Of that, they employ 54 full-time people. Now that's all year round, of course. We just recently had an economic impact study completed by Edmonton Tourism, and our economic impact to Alberta alone was $9.9 million for 6-7. We bring in about 50,000 people, tourism, from out of town over 10 days. Again, it's a statistic that when you multiply that by all the other festivals, we're a pretty significant force to be reckoned with.
Is that better? Yeah, okay. We're a pretty significant force to be reckoned with when it comes to economic impact. What is interesting is that the city of Edmonton invests $1.8 million in Edmonton Arts Community Foundation. Now that's $1.8 million, and imagine 2.8 million people coming to this city. We're all nonprofits. We're all, we make every dollar that we can stretch as far as we possibly can. And I think it's a statistic that has long been forgotten since we lost our City of Champions and our festival background as a festival city. So it's nice to hear these kinds of conversations happening, because it gives me an opportunity to toot the festival horn. And as the festival chair, it's a very, very important statistic for what we do for the city of Edmonton.
Great, thanks so much. Paul, I'm just gonna, we're gonna switch a little bit to the actual Taste of Edmonton. I remember it being in, well, I remember as a little girl going to the Churchill Square. And last year it changed to the Federal Plaza. Could you tell us a little bit about the pros, the cons, and everything in between, what worked, what didn't?
That's a bit of a long question, so I might be a little bit long-winded, and I do apologize. As you know, the LRT Valley Line was under construction for a great deal of time. The city gave us about 3 years' notice to get off of Churchill Square. Because the LRT line was going to run right through 102 Avenue. That's basically right through the heart of the festival. So all festivals had to basically come off the grounds, and it took us almost 3 years to find a new home. We settled in on the Legislative Plaza, now known as the Capitol Plaza, and it's been a great home for us this past year. It has been fraught with major issues around expenses, but that's to be expected when it's pretty hard to put a full-blown restaurant in the middle of a road in downtown Edmonton that has to be fully compliant with code. So we had a lot of learning curves, and we're looking forward to coming back again this year for one more year, and then we're going to see what happens next year in 2020.
Awesome. Thank you. Bob, with you, I'm going to start with maybe asking you to share a little bit about the Ice District Plaza for those of us who don't know a lot about it or have heard about it but don't know some of the details. If you can just share.
Of course, the vision for Ice Plaza goes back to 2009 when we first began to envision what the public realm would be around Rogers Place and what kind of opportunity Rogers Place might present in terms of creating a catalyst for other development. Fast forward these number of years into the future, and we've got a $2 billion development going on around what will be Ice Plaza. There was time where people thought that Ford Hall, the Winter Garden as it then was a bridge to nowhere, and that it was gonna be landing in a parking lot on the south side of 104th Avenue. We're obviously very excited about the level of density and the rapidity of development that we've been able to achieve in Ice District. But when we envisioned the Ice District Plaza, from the very beginning, we engaged And we were challenged to actually very in the early days by Chris and other people at DECL and other urban planners saying that, you know, our original vision for ICE Plaza was too inward looking, that it was going to be something that would work for our development, but it wouldn't work for the balance of the downtown. And that was a hard message to hear, because we had spent a lot of money and a lot of time and effort in the vision for ICE Plaza. But ultimately, we became convinced that there was a better way. And that resulted in us buying the bus depot site and reorienting where the arena was, bringing the plaza down to grade, and establishing connectivity to 104th Street, connectivity to the north edge down 102nd Street, connectivity to Jasper Avenue down 103rd Street, and very importantly, connectivity down 103A Avenue to the Civic Precinct and Sir Winston Churchill Square. That was all about creating a place in downtown Edmonton which would be part of the fabric of downtown Edmonton, which would integrate into all the great things that we had in our city. But we had a downtown at that point in time where we had pockets of really great things, but they lacked connectivity. And somebody who was having dinner at the Blue Plate Diner on 104th Street, if they were going to the Art Gallery of Alberta after dinner, was likely to get into their car. We think that having walkability is a hallmark of a great city. We think that the opportunity to walk and discover without intent along the way is one of the really rich experiences that you get in a great city. ICE District Plaza, the vision for it is to create a very enabled public space, to create a space that will work in synergy with the other plazas in the downtown, that can be programmed together with the other plazas in the downtown, that will create vibrancy in our core, and that will be a home for not-for-profit community events that otherwise would have a hard time getting up and running because of just the setup cost associated with it. The idea is to have all the bells and whistles in the plaza so that literally these community groups can come in and just plug right in and be up and running without a whole bunch of cost up front to get set up of audio and lighting systems and stages and things of that sort. So we're excited about it. We think that there's an opportunity to do something really special. We're proud of what we've achieved with Rogers Place. It's attracted attention literally worldwide. We've had people from 17 different countries come to see it. We've had every major sports league in North America come to see it. We've achieved something really great in a public-private partnership with Rogers Place that had an aspiration to achieve something that was new, that was something special, that was raised the bar. We think we can do the same thing with ICE District Plaza.
That's great. That's awesome. Paul, did any of that excite you? And if so, are there some logistics or some issues that you think potentially the ICE District Plaza could solve in the future? Did I put you on the spot on that one?
A little bit, but that's okay. I'm used to it. We have a major dilemma ahead of us with Taste of Edmonton. The new home that we're in right now accommodates our needs, but at a great expense. Over $175,000 in additional expenses to be there at the Ledge Plaza. When we move back to Churchill Square, the square is going to be one-third smaller. There's going to be an LRT line running through there. That means our festival is going to drop by one-third. Now, there's been a lot of discussion about the festival being split up and moved around the city to several different locations. In our polls with our partners, that doesn't work for them. It doesn't work for the infrastructure that we have, and it doesn't work for management in terms of how do you manage three sites versus one. So we have a serious issue. Not knowing a great deal about the ICE District Plaza, my understanding is that it's not very big, and I don't know for sure. I've read some statistics on it.
77,000 square feet.
Which probably wouldn't accommodate 15,000 people, not with the fire code and the fire regulations.
Yeah, about 12.
Yeah. So take out of that your infrastructure, your booths, your operating areas, you're probably going to be down to around 4,000 to 5,000 people. So that doesn't work for a festival that draws 30,000 people a day. So you never say never, right? Where there's a will, there's a way. We really don't know at this point what is going to happen. We have got some serious discussions to make. I can tell you right now that the Ledge Plaza or the Capitol Plaza comes with some huge expenses that we cannot incur. Our city has been great in helping us with that. Sorry. our city has been great in helping us with that expense, but they have also indicated that this will be the last time. So the citizens of Edmonton loved the Legislative Plaza. There is no question in my mind that that was a fabulous sight. But we couldn't even get a bus to come up, a bus service to come there. People had to walk 3 blocks. It cost us $22,000 in additional porta potties over the Capitol, over Churchill Square, to accommodate you because there's no bathrooms there. So, I mean, the costs go up and up and up. And one of the things that we're in discussions with the infrastructure folks is how can we make it sustainable? And it's certainly great to hear Bob speak here about, you know, plug and play and being able to move in. And I certainly look forward to seeing what that plug and play is because I know what it takes right now. And it's an awful lot of forethought and thinking. And I'd be interested to see where that is for the future.
Did you want to respond? No.
Sure. I think that the reality of compressed downtown sites is something that we just have to accept. But I think that there's also opportunities to look at creative solutions. And I just simply advert to the fact that the western edge of Sir Winston Churchill Square is 2 blocks away from the eastern edge of Ice Plaza. The city has targeted 103A Avenue for funding under the Green and Walkable program, which is being paid for by the CRL. And so the idea is to create a great pedestrian corridor that will connect Ice District to the Civic Precinct. And so I think that there's all sorts of potential to create events that are in both spaces. And in fact, I'd even go further than that. I think there's an opportunity to think about how the Ram Plaza might in time work into that. Because ultimately what we're looking to do, I would submit, is to create energy in the core. And when you have people moving in the core, that's a big part of creating that energy. Because of course, that movement of people creates opportunities along the way for retailers, for street performers, for all sorts of different things. And so from my perspective, I think that we have to accept that in a downtown environment that you're often going to be constrained with size. But that doesn't mean that there aren't creative solutions where we can really work together in partnership to create something great. And anything that, as I said, that gets people moving in the core is fundamentally a good thing.
Steven?
Yeah, I thought there were some really interesting points brought up so far about, you know, walkability and how we're connecting these spaces in between one another. I loved that point being brought up earlier of when we conduct people through the core on their feet, you know, they're more likely to pause and look, you know, if they're out of their car, if they're on a bike or if they're on their feet, then they're able to experience the downtown and connect with it more. So instead of just, you know, connecting with Taste of Edmonton and being able to walk through that wonderful space, they're able to connect with the idea of the core more so in a wider sense, I guess. This idea of, you know, connecting those spaces and allowing, you know, pedestrians to really have the right of way and to, you know, celebrate in between those two spaces is huge. And I think, you know, if we relate back to that idea of we are a festival city and that is something that we adhere to and want to continue pushing forward on, then, you know, those moments where we have to make a decision about right-of-way or vehicle right-of-way versus pedestrian right-of-way, I think we need to be strong in that decision and realize that maybe, you know, shutting down that road for Taste of Edmonton ultimately achieves that greater goal that we want to be reinforcing. So, you know, streets like 101 or 100, you know, that are really wide streets that conduct a lot of vehicular traffic. We have to weigh the costs and the benefits there. But ultimately, I think if we want to be connecting those two spaces and imposing that creative solution, then we also need to be making bold decisions with how we regulate the space.
That's great. That's awesome, guys. To go back to Taste of Edmonton, I guess, Paul, what do you want patrons of Taste of Edmonton to feel, experience when they come as festival goers?
One of the key factors is safety, feeling comfortable. One of the biggest complaints that we received 8 years ago was congestion. And we made a serious effort to reduce congestion significantly by taking over more streets. So that really resonates probably the most with me, is being able to give our guests a comfortable place to sit, shade, and to enjoy a dining experience that is al fresco. And that is something that you will see this year, that the entire festival, touch wood, will be licensed for liquor sales. So you'll have...
Yes.
And I think one of the other big key factors for us is family. We used to have a liquor license that was basically at 6 o'clock, we turned over to adult only. 2 years ago, we changed that model and it worked out so well. And that's probably some of the top 4 or 5 key messages that I'd like to get out to Edmontonians about Taste of Edmonton.
I'm going to turn to the audience for some questions, but before we do that, Bob and I were talking in regards to one of our articles, and I'm going to give you the mic to correct something that was that you feel was incorrectly articulated in the in the mic.
Well, you know, it's I understand where the article came from, because I think that the proposition that we made was in many quarters misperceived. Our proposition is fundamentally this. As a private sector entity, we have a commercial reality where we have to invest based upon the level of revenues that we can generate to service our investment. Everything in the development of the kind of that we're doing is financed. And nobody's financing you unless you can show a pro forma which says you're going to get a return that will support the level of your investment. On the public sector side, there is a reality that it's difficult to pursue the big grand vision for something because of the reality of multiple priorities and the need to spread the public money as widely as you can to try and address as many priorities as you can. And so what that ultimately ends up in leading to, unfortunately, is a watering down of vision. And so our fundamental proposition is that neither the private sector nor the public sector can on their own create a truly world-class public realm space. But as we saw with Rogers Place, a public-private partnership can be the solution for that. Now, what was reported in your piece was is that the Cates Group asked for $10 million for a private space. That's not the proposition. The proposition is that we would take a piece of privately owned real estate, which was acquired for a seven-figure sum, donate it to the city of Edmonton, cover 80% of the capital cost of creating this great public space, and then cover more than 50% of the ongoing operating costs. So instead of it being a situation where we're asking for money, it's actually a proposition where we're saying, together we can do something great, and we're prepared to cover 80% of the capital cost of this, and as I said, more than 50% of the operating cost. The other thing that's important about the capital side of the equation is that the CRL, which is one of the funding mechanisms for the arena, has a number of stipulated projects that can be paid for under the CRL. The CRL is, plainly speaking, a home run, because we're already at 85% of the 20-year projection for development of the downtown CRL zone after 3 years. So it's already clear that the CRL's got enough fiscal horsepower to pay for the city's investment in the arena in full with interest with certainty, and to cover over $450 million worth of capital programs outside of Rogers Place and Ice District, such as the new vision for Jasper Avenue, the new parks, the 20th Storm and Sanitary Line, and the Green and Walkable Program, which I adverted to earlier. The plaza is eligible for funding under the CRL. So you've got a funding mechanism that's there, that's got the horsepower, and this is money that can only be spent in the downtown on projects approved under the CRL. So we think the proposition is a good one. We think it's an opportunity to do something really special. We think that there is a need to have a place where community events can come in and plug and play. You think about, you know, the McEwen Community Choir. You know, for them to have an event in a public space requires an awful lot of setup. You know, they got to have lights, they got to have audio, they've got to have a stage. That all represents cost that is difficult for them to bear. If all those resources are there and they come in and they simply pay an incremental operating cost for cleaning, for pulling the stage out, then those things become possible. And so we think there's an opportunity to create a venue for things that otherwise don't have a home, things that will enrich our city, things that will enliven our core. You create a core that's a destination that people don't necessarily know what they're going to engage in when they get into the core, but they know that they will find something compelling. That's the hallmark of a great city. You know, you think of the great cities in the world, you wander around without necessarily knowing what you're going to find, but you just wander around in confidence that you're going to find something great. That's the downtown that we'd love to have. And we think that downtown Edmonton is poised on the precipice of great things. We're having an opportunity to transform our downtown and change the way that the city sees our world. Make it more attractive for residents, make it more attractive for commercial investment, make it more attractive for tourism. You know, I think that we're living in halcyon days right now in our downtown. Things have really changed, and I think there's some really great opportunities, but we got to keep the momentum up.
Thank you. That's awesome. Does anybody have any questions for Lisa?
So, question for Stephen. I don't know how familiar you are with the neighborhood of Oliver, but I was just curious, from a theoretical perspective, if you had to pick a space to hold a festival, which space would you choose, why, and what would you change to make it even better?
Great question.
Yeah, excellent.
A serious question.
Thank you. I begin to think of festivals in my mind, and I think there's so many different festivals, so I guess different festivals for different spaces. When I think of like drawing people in and having a unique sort of venue for a space and having it connect to other areas, I think a space that isn't programmed a lot, because it is a little bit more complex, is right in and around Grandin Station, just at the school there, which it's a Francophone school, I'm pretty sure. Trilingual. Oh my goodness!
wow, we're packing in so many things there already. But yeah, there's beautiful park space there, residential roads that are very, you know, don't have a lot of traffic on them and would, you know, allow for a really interesting setting of, you know, being around residences where, you know, there's more families moving to the core in that area. There's lots of young people already there that would be love to be able to activate that space. So I'm not sure what that festival would look like, but being able to be right by the station and have people be able to take the LRT right there, be able to have people bike right there instead of having to drive their car to that spot, would be awesome to bring people there and to have them recognize a space that I don't think has been highlighted a lot. And as I was speaking to earlier with, you know, the roads themselves and the park that kind of surrounds the school, that's I think that's ample space for some sort of festival that would, I think, turn some heads in Edmonton. And of course, I don't know, now I kind of see it spilling out over into the River Valley the park right there. That'd be a fascinating little spot right there. And I think it's something that downtown residents of Oliver residents, I think if they had ownership of that or really guided that process, that'd be huge, because I think they'd be inviting a lot of Edmonton into that area. And so for them to be able to share that space with other people, that I think would result in the greatest success. So yeah, thank you for the question.
My question is for Bob. And my question might be a little adversarial, but I will share that. And I'm looking at this article which talks about, it has a quote that says that the plaza is a private space that appears public. And you may quibble with that.
I would, actually, very
but
fundamentally.
Certainly there are elements of a public and private partnership in it. My question for you is, it's well known that across North America, public dollars have been used to fund privately run sports arenas and surrounding areas, and there's debate on, you know, the benefits and whatnot. My question is, with Churchill Square and City Hall, for example, those places are open and available to people who are marginalized, including the homeless. You know, you walk into City Hall any morning, you will see people sleeping, as they should be allowed to, in a space that's public. So my question is, will the Ice District Plaza, because it is funded, at least in part, by public dollars, be a place that people who are marginalized, who may be homeless, will they be able to access that space, just as any other education?
It's a great question, and it's not adversarial, because it's an important thing to talk about. Right now, in the absence of a public-private partnership, this is a private space. But fundamentally, our proposition is not that we are seeking public money for a private space, but rather that we are offering private money to create a public space. And so, if it's got the name of a public space, it's got to walk the walk of a public space. And the reality is that that will include being open to all Edmontonians, including marginalized people. And so, you know, amongst the things that we have in the design is an outdoor heating element that will be going all winter long. And we recognize that that will be a magnet for homeless people. That's the reality of a public space. And we all got to find a way to live together in a respectful fashion. And it's kind of interesting, because when we were looking at Rogers Place, I was certainly very conscious of the fact that our neighbors to the north included marginalized communities. And I'll say to you in all candor that my initial reaction was that we had to find a way to ensure that the patrons of the arena were not harassed or harangued by that community. But I came to realize pretty quickly that that goes both ways. And we've been really careful to think our way through and responsibly handle outcomes where patrons of the arena are in fact harassing and haranguing the marginalized community to the north. And so it's all about finding ways to live together in a respectful fashion. And so, that's the reality of a public space, and appropriately so. Now, going back to arenas as to whether or not they have a positive benefit, it's absolutely undeniable that the arena here in Edmonton, by not our calculations, but rather the calculations of the City of Edmonton and EEDC, has been an outstanding outcome. It's been a great public investment. Because as I alluded to earlier, not only is the tax uplift sufficient to pay for the city's interest in the arena, but it's creating a capital vehicle to do all sorts of other things in a fiscally constrained environment. And so there are some people who say that, you know, the suburbs have been suffering because of all of the investment downtown. There's a reality to this, that because the CRL is a capital vehicle that will pay for hundreds of millions of dollars worth of capital investment by the public in the downtown, that frees up tax-based money that can be now spent in the suburbs. Because now the City of Edmonton isn't looking to pay for the new vision for Jasper Avenue out of the mill rate. And at a time when the Municipal Sustainability Initiative initiative funding that's coming from the province has been constrained, and there's a bit of a state of flux as to what the relationship is between the municipalities and the province, you know, that extra capital mechanism is a very meaningful thing. Listen, you know, at the end of the day, this becomes a function of finding the right balances. And as I alluded to earlier, being responsible to the realities of our community and achieving the best outcomes we can for our community.
Awesome. Thanks so much. One last question for me, just because I can do that, and then we will end the evening. Starting from Stephen and ending with Paul, every year you go to the Taste of Edmonton, what's the one thing you make sure you get before you leave?
Green onion cakes. Duh! Amazing, yeah. Some lemonade too, but yeah. Delicious.
Let me say the taste is an absolutely essential part of the cultural fabric of our city, and you know, I'm confident that we'll find the right solution as Edmontonians to make sure that it continues long into the future. For me, it's the short ribs.
You stole mine from Norman's, right? Yeah, that's Norman's. Yeah, mashed potatoes and gravy and the beef short ribs.
Okay, I'll make sure to try those. Thank you so much to our panelists. It's been really great discussion. We really appreciate you taking the time to share a little bit about your experience and share some of your stories and answer some questions. If you help me give a hand of thanks to our panels, we will end with that.
And thank you to Oliver Community League President Luam Kipple-Merriam for hosting the conversation. Edmonton is not going to stop talking about festivals, and as the discussion got into, these events can help shape how we feel about our city and how we even use our public spaces. The panelists, again, were Bob Black, Executive VP of the Cates Group and Oilers Entertainment Group Special Projects, Paul Lucas, GM of Taste of Edmonton, and Stephen Rates, a U of A urban planning student. Thanks to the team at The Yards for their help in this podcast partnership. The conversation continues, though, at theyardsyeg.ca, where you can check out the new issue and past stories. And at downtown and all of our businesses listed at theyardsyeg.ca, where you can find a copy of the magazine published 4 times each year. Thanks for listening to this podcast, a partnership of 2 of Edmonton's local journalism publishers, The Yards and Edmonton Quotient. You can find more stories, podcasts, and community items at theyardsyeg.ca and edmontonquotient.com. I'm Jeff Samsonow. Thank you for being part of the conversation.